Ching, ching, bling, bling. Let's cut the chatter. In today's episode, we are living the dream, the Sean Dursey story. Welcome to the Tucci Talks Wealth, Health, and Everything Else podcast. I'm your host, David Tucci, an educator, a father of three. Join me as I take you on a funky journey through life, from a reckless young man to a humbled older man. Each week, I will offer different insights on my life experiences and the experiences of others, and how that has shaped our present day realities. So let's begin our funky journey into improving our health, wealth, and you guessed it, everything else. Check, check. Is the mic on? Yeah, it's working. Oh. Why? Then you wouldn't have Tucci Talks. Mondays are fun. That's why you listen to Tucci Talks. Yes, we are together again, friends. Welcome to Tucci Talks, Wealth, Health, and Everything Else. Who sings that song? And no cheating. First person to answer gets a shout out on next week's episode. So make sure to email me or contact me on social media. I want the listeners to subscribe to the podcast wherever you like listening to podcasts if you're enjoying the content. I've been enjoying the journey so far, and I'll continue to enjoy the journey as long as we continue to do our best to inspire each week. Even if the stories that are shared can resonate with one person, I think it's worth it. Today's episode should offer some inspiration as Tucci Talks welcomes a young man that is steeped in humility. I consider humility the greatest virtue. It will be your best teacher in life, your most truthful guardian angel. And if you haven't yet had a real dose of it, ooh baby, just wait, because life is like Rambo. It's brutal, it's relentless, and this is the best way I can describe life.
Johnny, this is Troppin. Where the hell are you?
Just substitute Johnny with life.
John, come in.
Life, come in. It's nice and quiet.
Murdoch.
Everything seems to be going your way. Life's good. It's calm.
Rambo, this is Murdoch. We're glad you're alive. Where are you? Give us your position and we'll come to pick you up.
But then the calm. The breathing intensifies. Life starts getting a little more difficult. Stormy nights.
I'm coming to get you.
Uh-oh. And that's what happens. What do you do? What do you do when this happens in your life? You get back up. That's the key. That's the best example I have of why life is like Rambo. And even if it's brutal and relentless, I still think we don't have to do it alone. Just like last week, I spoke about my friend. I wish he would have mentioned something. We would have been very supportive, because life is going to come at us and we cannot do it alone. Anyway, I'll be back in 30 seconds. What did I learn from having JD Era on the podcast last week? Well, I learned that if you want something bad enough, it's going to be a grind and a struggle, and success didn't come easy for Era. He had to work. He had to be resilient. He had to figure out solutions to problems. You're not always going to have the answers, and they're not always going to come easy, and people want everything easy. That's not really gratifying. Look what JD Era actually did. He waltzed into the Def Jam studio in New York as a no-name Canadian rapper and hustled. He worked connections. Rejection was customary for Era, but he didn't let that hold him back. And then the success started happening. And it's so good to see the humility in his character. He understands the Rambo of life. He lived it. It beat him down, but he stood tall. And now he wants to give back to his community by helping out the younger dudes coming up. How can you not love and admire that? Give back. Be a mentor to someone, people. That's how we will evolve, and that's how we will get better. Okay, on to today. My next guest grew up in the suburbs of Toronto, where he started playing hockey in the GTHL at a very young age. Although he was never the best player in his age group, that never inhibited the belief he had in himself. Through a ridiculous amount of hard work, he began to move up the ladder in the hockey world. His unparalleled work ethic propelled him to the position he has now, living the dream as a defenseman in the Los Angeles Kings organization. He is here today to graciously share his story. It is my pleasure to welcome Sean Durzi to Tucci Talks. So welcome to Tucci Talks. It's nice to have you. Nice to see you. I want to say, how's life been treating you during the pandemic? Has it allowed you to slow down a bit, embrace the simpler pleasures?
Yeah. I mean, you know, especially in my field of play, there's not a lot of time to kind of slow things down and, you know, focus mentally and you know, kind of just kind of hit the refresh button and work on other things, you know, the mental side of the game. So I've kind of taken advantage of this time so far. Been keeping quiet, keeping cool, and you know, kind of getting a chance to refresh. So it's been good.
So what is it? What does refreshing mean? Like, are you watching some Netflix? Reading some books?
Yeah. I got enough Netflix in, but I mean, it's just, you know, in our generation, especially as a pro player now, you get so much of the game and, you know, you're doing video, you're doing this, that. It was just a good chance to kind of cool down, get away from the game, you know, visit up north a bit, you know, just work on other side of the game. You know, they say 90% of the game is mental, and I think for me to get the chance to kind of refresh, and it only makes me hungrier next year. So it's been good, but I'm definitely missing it.
For sure. So the title of this episode is Living the Dream, the Sean Durzi story. So are you living the dream?
Yeah, you know what? It's funny because there's different parts of my career so far that I'd say, you know, this is my dream, and then I get it, and then, you know, there's always more. So kind of, but you know, I don't think I'm quite where I want to be yet completely. I mean, I think I'm on the right track, and I think if things keep going well, then, you know, soon enough.
But you're in the NHL. Isn't that a dream for
yeah,
a lot of guys?
Good,
that
it's good. But you always want more, I said. You know, there's always a little bit more that you can get to, and I think it's funny because every single step, like I said, you feel like you get there, and then you realize there's such a bigger field of the play going on. So,
I mean, when did you start playing hockey?
I started around age 5 skating and 6 in games, and you know, it was just from friends around the street. My parents put me in with their friends' kids, and I mean, I've been playing ever since, so it's been a while.
Did you play other sports as well growing up?
Yeah, I was, well, you know me, I was through high school, I played almost everything, you know, tennis, soccer, rugby. And I even tried out, I think, for the basketball team one time. But I think it was good for me to kind of get out of the hockey world a little bit, you know, experience new sports, and especially as a younger kid, it's a little bit different now, but playing new sports, you know, football, things like that, it helps coordination, it helps your athleticism, it was great.
True.
So I've been all around.
So what was it about hockey though that you just fell in love with?
You know, I think it's the team. I've always been a team sport guy. You know, I've played tennis, it was more of a singles thing and things like that, but I think just being on a team, being around the guys, the competitiveness of the game and the complete athleticism it takes, you know, you're skating, using your feet, hands, head, things are happening so fast too. It's a lot of fun, especially when things get going and you get lost in the game like that, you kind of just forget about everything else. And that was kind of the real big game changer for me.
And I know in Canada, hockey's so organized, and it's so organized at such a young age. Is the GTHL, which is the Greater Toronto Hockey League, right?
Yep.
Is that considered one of the best leagues for those age groups?
Yeah, absolutely. And not only in Ontario, but I think in Canada, it's top minor hockey league program throughout Canada. It's you know, some of the best kids in the world move to Ontario to play in this league. I played with a couple kids from Russia who came to play.
You're talking about kids from outside of Canada,
yeah,
and from another country.
I'm 14, 15 years old, and I got kids moving from Russia, Florida.
Wow.
All over the States. They're coming to Toronto to play in this league. So it was a competitive league growing up, sometimes a little bit too competitive for minor hockey, but I think it's really a good league.
So did you dominate at all at that level in the GTHL?
Yeah. So my career started, I played hockey when I was six, and you know, to kind of go through the storyline here, I wasn't good enough for AAA. I wasn't good enough for the top league when I came out of, you know, training, things like that, when I was 6 or 7 or 8 years old. So I started in AA, the second highest level at the time. And, you know, I played with a few of my friends and, you know, things like that. And I wasn't really into the whole early morning skates, this, that practice. I kind of went to the games and, you know, I played, but I wasn't really dominant. And I think towards maybe when I got a couple years later, I started playing a bit better, and I actually made a jump to AAA, but then I got cut.
How old are you at this point?
I was 13 years old. So finally, things started going good. I'm playing AAA, and I remember the first time I actually got benched, I was kind of like, wow, like this is... I was upset. I was a young kid, and you know, my coach sits me on the bench, and I'm thinking this game's supposed to be for fun, and I'm getting benched right now. And I remember he told me, he goes, you know, if you can't play out there, I'll find somebody else who can. And he sat me on the bench, and I was in shock. I'm a 13-year-old kid, and this has always been a game to me, and all of a sudden I get benched. And so I ended up getting cut that next season. I got sent back to AA, and as I played AA, I kind of regained my love for the game, and I kind of refound that confidence and belief in myself, which kind of carried with me ever since then. But
I remember we spoke off air, and you were talking about how you knew you loved it, hockey, that is, when you loved going to practice, and your dad was telling you, why are you getting so excited?
Yeah. So I was, that year I got cut from AAA. That was a tough year for me. That's kind of when I realized, like, you know, is this even fun for me anymore? And my love for the game kind of faltered at that point.
Oh, so when you got cut from the AAA team, you started to question whether you wanted to continue playing hockey?
Yeah, not quite. Like, I love the game, and I always had that love for it. It was just as if I was really, really in love with it. And I was, you know, I was like, this is supposed to be fun. I'm supposed to be having fun.
Right.
But I'm stressed out, like things like that. I'm 13 years old. I'm playing minor hockey. I'm still paying to play the game. And I wasn't having fun. So those years in AA is where I remember the moment that I really, really fell in love with the game. And like you said, I was telling you before, it was I came home from school one day, and I had practice that night. It was a practice. It was a Wednesday night practice at an old dinky arena in Malton Arena. I actually remember the arena. And we practiced there every Wednesday. And all day, since the point I woke up, I was thinking about practice, and I was so excited to get to practice. I got home from school. I had homework. You know, I quickly did my homework, and then I put my headphones in, and I'm getting ready to go. And my dad comes to find me. He says, you know, it's time to go. You got practice tonight. And he sees me with my headphones on. I got my sticks ready. I hop in the car, and I still got my headphones on. And he looks at me, and he goes, you know, this is just practice. You know, what are you getting so excited for? And then I thought to myself, I'm like, that's, you know, this is, I'm so excited to go to practice that I'm getting fired up for it. And, you know, that's when I realized, you know, I really love the game.
I guess that's when you start to realize you just love the sound of the stick and the skates and the smells.
Yeah, that's what I was telling you. That was just passes on the tape, you know, the clicking of the it was unbelievable. Like, that's when I fell in love with the game. You know, a lot of people ask me, have you loved the game forever? And a lot of kids say they have. I've loved it my whole life. And I have loved it my whole life. But that's when I truly fell in love with the game, was that day is the first time I remember. And that's soon after that,
that's an awesome story. I like that digging into that kind of stuff.
I don't know how many people know that one, but that's one that I think is one that I'll remember, that moment right there.
So when did you start to realize, I could take this hockey, this talent, to the next level potentially?
So I was playing, it was that year, and I was playing AA, and my parents took me to a Leaf game. And it was funny because I had a favorite player, Erik Karlsson, growing up. You know, he's a guy I modeled my game after. He's offensive defenseman. He skates very well. He's a great player. And we went to the game, and I specifically knew I wanted to go early. And I told my parents I want to go for warm-ups. I want to see these guys on the ice. And I took a video on my iPod Touch, and I iso-cammed him the whole warm-ups. I saw everything he did. I saw the way he stick-handled the puck. And I was like, you know what? Just from the pregame intros, I'm like, this is unbelievable. This is what I want to do with my life. Like, this is the coolest thing ever. I'm in love with this game, and this is what I want to do the rest of my life. So that year, I took my game to another level, and, you know, I worked, and towards the end of the year, I started calling AAA coaches because the next year was my OHL draft year.
Right.
And I was calling coaches myself, actually. I was getting numbers from my friends who played AAA, and I called them, and I called them, and I called them, and finally I got a couple coaches to come. And the first few coaches I remember, I would go into the game. I'd be motivated, I'd be fired up, ready to go. And into the third period, going into the second intermission, I'm like, you know what, I got a little bit more. Come out for the third, and the coach was gone. And this happened to the first three or four coaches. And then finally I called a coach, and he came out with his brother, and his name was Mike O'Shea, actually. His brother was Darcy O'Shea, and my brother's actually playing for them next year. But anyways, I called this coach, and he came out to watch me, and he stayed for the whole game. And he gives me a call, and this was at a tournament, actually. It's funny because this was the point. But he gives me a call, and he says, you know what? We're going to give you a chance. You got there's 60 on our team right now. Teams most only carry 60. He goes, but we'll give you the 7th D spot. And I said, you know what? That sounds good. I'm gonna work my way up. Like, I thought to myself, this is what I want to do. I'm gonna make the jump. And he gave me the chance. Anyways, it was that tournament that I was playing in when he came to watch me. Where, you know, even my mom said, she said, what was this? I took my entire game to a new level. I scored, I think it was like 5 goals in 5 games. And as a defenseman, we ended up winning the tournament. I got called up for a year up, and it was playing year up AA tournament, which ended up being the point where I said, you know what, I could do this. So that was kind of a little bit of confidence that year in that tournament. And that was kind of the point where I thought maybe I could do something out of this.
So I want to know if you remember this. This ties in nicely. So in high school, guidance counselors meet with students to discuss future plans. So your guidance counselor asked you that, and you said,
oh, come on, you remember this story?
and you said, I want to play in the NHL. He responds, okay, that's fine, but we need a plan B. So I want to know, what's your plan B? To which you respond, I don't have a plan B. It's just going to get in the way of plan A. Is this true?
Yeah. I knew exactly where you're going when you started talking about that. Yeah, it was.
So was he shocked? Like,
oh, you should have. Oh, I wish you saw his face too. He was. He looked at me like I had 3 heads. But he. I remember that day. He wasn't the biggest hockey guy, and he looked at me and he said, "What do you mean you only got? We need a plan B for you." And I told him, I said, "No, I don't have one." Anyways, I left that office, and I think I got an email or a phone call from him every week since, trying to figure out what my plan B was, and I still didn't give him one. But that's hilarious that you remember that. That was a while back. That was a good time.
So in 2014, you got drafted to the OHL by Owen Sound. What was that like?
Yeah, so I ended up – so going back to the storyline here, I got a chance from that coach. I was a 7th defenseman, but I remember every day, skated every Sunday with him in that summer. And, you know, I was trying to prove myself. It was almost like a tryout. Every skate I knew was a tryout. Even though there were small skills, skates, things like that, it was a tryout. Because this was my OHL draft year. It was a big year for me.
So this is before the actual OHL draft.
This is before the draft. Yeah, this is leading up to the draft.
Right.
So anyways, I entered the year, and you know, I think I worked my way up to maybe a 4 or 5 spot out of 7 and played throughout the year. And by the end of the season, I kind of worked my way up to a 1 spot. Or 1 or 2, sorry. I was on the power play, things like that. And he was playing me pretty good minutes. So I was, you know, I thought maybe I gave myself a chance. And this was my OHL draft year. And I thought everything was falling into place until I heard that every single guy on my team, or most guys on my team, were getting phone calls from these OHL teams. And, you know, I'm asking my parents, I'm like, hey, you guys getting calls? And they said, no. And you know, I'm checking my email every day, and I didn't get any calls. So it was OHL draft day. It was April 5th, 2014. It was my brother's birthday. That's how I remember. And I was home alone with my grandmother. And she's from Portugal, so she didn't understand the draft. She's kind of watching her Portuguese soap opera on the TV. And I'm sitting in the back, and I had my computer. I had a bunch of friends in the draft, so my computer was open on the draft, and they stream it online for you know, for the viewers who the listeners who don't know. But I'm watching the draft, and I remember my buddy got picked in the 10th round. This is 10 rounds in. There's 15 rounds total.
Okay.
So I said a prayer that night, and you know, going through the draft, we're 10 rounds deep, and I'm still not picked. So I kind of
worried. Are you kind of worried right now that you might not get picked?
You know what? I went into the day. I didn't expect anything. Obviously, you're hoping that you get picked, and I wasn't really expecting anything. My parents were in Mexico. My brother was at a birthday party, or not his birthday party, but maybe it was his. But he was with his friends, and I was sitting alone, and I kind of knew. I said, you know what? I'm going to go do something. I'm going to get my mind off this. And so I went outside and I started stick handling, and I'm stick handling. I got a puck and I got my headphones on, and all of a sudden my music stops and I'm getting a ring, a buzz on my phone. And I'm like, what's going on? I go to my phone, and it's Joe Marino. You know, Joe, we went
right
to school together.
Yeah.
You know, we grew up together. Anyways, Joe texted me. He goes, congrats. We're like, congrats, bro. Like, unbelievable. And I'm like, no way. 1 second later, I get 10 other texts come in, and I run inside.
Congratulate,
yeah. Yeah, I go inside. I check my computer, and literally, you know, I got the Owen Sound attack. Didn't even know that where Owen Sound was. They took a chance. And it was the 12th round out of 15, so I got picked. So that was unbelievable for me. I was jumping around the house, and, you know,
So is that like a moment you said earlier about there's different dreams? Was that like you were living the dream at that point?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. You know, at that point, the dream for me was getting drafted in the OHL.
And, right, right.
And I get picked in the 12th round. I'm jumping around like I just went first overall. So that was a dream for me. And that was a pretty big, that was a good step. I was really happy. And you feel great, but then you only realize that's just the tip of the iceberg, right?
So in 2015, 2016 was your first season in the OHL. And
yep.
And you played forward, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
how was that experience?
That was different. So I got drafted. I played another year in the GTHL. And then I came to camp the next year. And I wanted to prove a point. And I wanted to see how well I matched up against all these other guys who got drafted ahead of me. So Played hard, and you know, things happened so fast that in 1 week I was told that they wanted to sign me, and I was going to move out to Owen Sound, and that was tough. I was 16, you know, I had to leave all my friends at school, my family, and you know, move to a different city to play hockey and pursue my dream. So
you go live on your own?
I live with a family there.
Oh, okay.
As a 16-year-old, they have billet families that the team takes care of. So they put me in a home with a different family, and you know, I'm playing hockey there. So that was my first year. And I remember minor midget I was playing. My draft year, I had 7 defensemen. This year in the OHL, my first year, they had 10 defensemen. So I thought, you know, how hard I had to work to get up from 7 to 1. I gotta beat 3 extra guys now.
Right.
So that was a tough decision for me, but you know, like I bet on myself. I signed the contract, and I played my first season in the OHL. And you know, what I did was just to get in the lineup, they would play me on forward some nights. And a piece of me thinks that helped me, honestly, because, you know, you understand a different aspect of the game. You understand where forwards like to puck. You understand how to play and where you are in different situations and things like that. But
so that was out of necessity. You're playing forward out of necessity because there's too many.
Just to get me in the lineup. Yeah, it was, I still ended up getting, I was a healthy scratch for about 20 games that season, but I just to get into the lineup, it was my first year in the OHL, they put me on forward. So I scored about 10 goals that year, which was all right for me. And it was a pretty good year considering, you know, playing forward first year in the OHL, and it was successful, but obviously I wanted to play my position, defenseman. So the next year, that's what I was working towards.
So then in 2017, you actually went to the NHL draft in Chicago and you sat through 12 rounds.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was funny
you
story.
So you get an agent and you decide, I think there's an opportunity for me to get drafted. I want to be there. I want to be there if my name gets called. Was this the thought process?
Yeah. Yeah. So what happened was that year, when I entered the OHL, I knew I had 2 years to make it to the NHL or to get drafted to the NHL. It was my second year in the O, was going to be my NHL draft year.
Why do you, how does it work? What do you mean you 2 years you have in the OHL? Is that
so
all
it's
the,
when, yeah. So basically it's when you're 18,
yeah.
But there's a cutoff date. It's September 15th. If your birthday's after September 15th, then you're the following year. You're 17. Yeah. So basically I was I'm a late birthday. I'm on the 21st of October. So I was the following year, and I knew that I had those 2 years under my belt. So anyways,
right.
The second year I come back and I actually found out going into the season that I had an extra bone in my left ankle that was bothering me through the whole off season. I got
so
surgery.
You played through pain.
I got surgery in August, and we're going in, at the end of August to Owen Sound. I got surgery in August, so I ended up missing the first 8 games of the year with an ankle injury, cut into my off season, things like that. This is my draft year, so I was really key on having a big year. I didn't want to waste my off season. I trained hard, and finally, this thing in my ankle wouldn't go away. So. It was a thing that I think like 5% of the people in the world have. If you aggravate it, you feel it, and I got it removed. So that was just unfortunate adversity that I had to deal through, you know, especially in such a big year. But you know, I got through it. I played that season, and I finished the year with I think about 38 points in 60 games. I missed 6 games in the beginning of the year, and you know, it was pretty good year for me. I was happy with it. You know, 38 points as a defenseman, and I thought I did enough to give myself a chance. I think I was 130th or 125 in North American rankings, and I had to make the decision. You know, you're going to go to the NHL draft. And
are people telling you, hey, I think you have a chance. Why don't you go for it?
Yeah.
Are you just making this decision?
Well, you always see the rankings and things like that, but you can never pay too much attention because you don't know who's behind their computer making these rankings, things like that. But I was on most of them, and there was a few I wasn't on. And I had my roommate that year, Nick Suzuki, who's with the Montreal Canadiens right now. He was projected to go in the first round. And I remember deciding 2 weeks before the draft that, you know, I called my agent. I said, you know what, I think because of my experience in the OHL, not thinking I was going to get drafted and I get picked, I'd want to be there if I got picked in the NHL. You know, this is another – like we're talking about, this is a dream for
dream.
Me.
Yeah, yeah.
I want
to
be there. So I made the decision to fly out. We, me, my mom, and my dad, we went out. We flew out together to Chicago. And like you said, we sat through 7 NHL rounds, a lot of picks, and nothing happened. So it was, that's what happened there.
And a lot of people said, you said 7, is it 12 rounds or 7 rounds?
Seven in the NHL.
Oh, it's 7. Okay.
It might have used to be 12, but it's 7 now.
So and, a lot of people were saying that you were crushed, but you said, no, I really didn't feel crushed. You just understood now that you have work to do to really attain a level of success that you need to be at.
Yeah. So my biggest worry going to the draft actually was my mom and how upset she was going to be if I didn't get picked. And I remember telling her, I said, Mom, you know what, whatever happens, I'm going to come out of this motivated. And she said, okay. And as the draft winded down, we're going through the seventh round, and you know, picks are firing off in the seventh round. These are depth picks, and you know, teams are kind of just spitting them out. So we're looking at the board there and to see it slowly coming down. But a big mindset I had going into that draft is whatever happens, I'm going to prove the people who believe in me right, instead of, you know, the traditional spin of proving all those 30 teams wrong.
Right. So, yes.
So what I did is I remember thinking of that when I was sitting there too. And I remember I had my parents on either side of me. I had my roommate, Nick, who got drafted the day before in round one. He was there, and I had my billet, Sarah Rao, who was on the other side of me, my billet in Owen Sound, who I lived with. And they're all sitting there, and, you know, you're thinking of all the people you got back home. You know, I got my best friends, they're watching on TV, you know, family members. It's a lot of pressure. Everyone's waiting for this big moment, right, for your name, yeah, to be called, and then it doesn't happen. So I thought to myself, I said, you know what, I got all these people who believe in me, who think that I'm going to be who I should have got drafted today, and who I'm going to be a great player in the NHL one day. I'm going to prove all those people right. So that's what I was kind of thinking after that. And
that's a great mindset to have, because a lot of athletes, what comes to mind right now is Draymond Green. When he got picked in the NBA draft, he's like, I'm going to prove all those guys wrong. All those GMs wrong. Yeah. And you said, you're not going to take that mindset. You want to prove all the people that believed in you, you want to prove them right.
It almost, to me, it feels even better in that way. You know, it's almost the same thing, proving people wrong, because at the end of the day, that's what you're doing. But to know that you proved those people who had your back when you were down, that's a good feeling.
Yeah, that's the key. I think that's the key. So let's flip the page to 2017-2018 season. You went to the draft in Dallas.
Yeah.
Did you have a flashback of the year before? What if I don't get picked? Does fear, uncertainty, and doubt creep in?
Yeah, so what happened is I left that year, and at the 2017 draft, I got calls from the New York Islanders, the Florida Panthers, and the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I got invited to all their camps that summer. So what I did, I went to three different...
Okay, hold on. Take me through this. So you didn't get drafted, but these NHL teams are calling you.
Yeah, so... Cool. So at this point, you kind of flip the page, and it happened that day at the draft. I'm actually sitting down, and right after the draft, you get these phone calls. And what it is these teams calling you to invite you to their camp. So you flip the page right away, and you try to earn a contract as a free agent. So that's what my focus had to switch right away. There was no time to sulk. It was, you know, this is what I'm going to do next. So I ended up getting a call. My first call was from Brian McCabe, who played for the Leafs. He was my, hero growing up. I watched this guy on TV all the time, and called me. He was with Florida, and he invited me to camp. So I went to three different camps that summer, and I got cut from all three of them. So I knew, I said, you know what I was doing, well, I was working hard. I was working really, really hard to get to that point, and I thought I was doing a lot, but I knew it wasn't enough yet. So I took a step back that summer, and I kind of had a blank slate. I said, this is what I got to do. I looked at my nutrition first. I flipped my whole nutrition around. I was on a different diet. I was, you know, I asked nutritionists, I asked around, I got into all my contacts, things like that, flipped my nutrition, went to my training. My trainer had a gym the summer before it closed down. I found a new trainer, Kyle Paragua, who actually still trained with now, other than, you know, COVID going on, but found a new trainer, and then I had to look at the on-ice. I had to look at what I needed to improve, and I had to be brutally honest with myself, Tooch. Like, it's a tough decision to look at yourself and say,
Are you watching tape of yourself and saying, I have an issue right there. I'm too slow over there. Like,
Constantly.
Oh, but that, okay.
I think a big thing for me was kind of taking feedback. And I think if you ask enough people, you know, what do they think, and, you know, especially the guys in the NHL, any NHL team I talked to that year, I would ask them, I was sure to ask them, what do you think is keeping me from being a top pick? Even though I'm not even ranked, I'm asking these guys, what's keeping me out of the first round of the NHL draft?
Are you asking coaches, players, or anybody who will listen?
anybody who will listen, honestly, my friends, my family, my, you know, especially these pro guys who are coming from the NHL team. So feedback was a big thing, and I had to look at myself and I had to tell myself, you know what, my skating is not where it has to be. That was the biggest thing for me, was my skating. So I found a skating coach that summer, and his name was Kelly Reed. And I kind of, the big thing for me was finding people who wanted to make me better, because they got these people all over who give you a sheet of paper and say, go do this, this will help you. But then they give it to 10 other guys.
Right.
I wanted more specific training. I need to work on my skating. So I needed someone, one-on-one coach, to pick apart my skating and be brutally honest with me, or else, you know, if I didn't step out of my comfort zone, there was no chance I was going to get better.
So how do you find this Kelly Reed coach?
So a big thing is, for myself growing up, my parents always taught me is networking is huge. Having these contacts and always having people that you can talk to no matter what aspect of life. If you have a contact somewhere, they're going to help you. People have, you know, their professions are all in different fields. So anyways, I found this guy from a friend who was skating with him, and he said he's great. So I called about 4 or 5 skating coaches that summer, and he was the one who stuck out to me the most, because he was the most personable with me, and he seemed like he knew what it took to get me better. So besides the fact I went out, I picked apart my game that summer, and you know what, I did everything I could. I took everything to the next level to try. I got one more year to get drafted now. So that first year in October, back in the OHL, I'm back in Owen Sound. And
but we even spoke before, you were talking about how you were training in extremes.
Yeah. So that was that Kelly Reed. Yeah.
Right.
I'm gonna bring that up. So that Kelly Reed, his aspect of things was, we're going to train. So I wasn't low enough in my skating, just for an example, so everyone understands, is my skating, I wasn't nearly low enough in my stride and things like that. So he made me skate as almost as if my ass is on the ground, on the ice, touching the ice. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, Kelly, like, there's no chance I'm going to be skating like this in a game. And he looked at me and said, the reason we do this is if you're skating this low to the ground and you adjust somewhere in the middle, if we right. gain that 4 or 5%, it's going to help you miles. Like, it's going to help you a ton. So I looked at him. I said, you know what? I got to change something. I'm going to listen to you on this. And it ended up paying off huge.
It's funny that you say the 5%, because I love the word extraordinary. It's that little extra.
That's it.
It's a little extra from ordinary to extraordinary. That little extra. And that's what he had you do that summer.
Yeah, he did. He was great. I still skate with him to this day. He's a big part of that off season for me. And it was that mentality that kind of got me to where I am. So anyways, going back to the storyline, I'm entering the season, and it's October. In the first month of October, I won Defenseman of the Month in the OHL, the entire league. And everyone's kind of looking around and saying, like, you know, who is this guy?
Right.
Got undrafted. And that was a big statement for me. I wanted to come to the season, and I wanted to make a splash right away. I wanted to show everyone that, you know what, this is the kind of player I am. So ended up finishing that year with 50 points. I had 50 points in 40 games. And the reason I missed some time is I also suffered an injury, which kind of didn't help with that. But I suffered an injury, and, you know, the questions started right away. You got the media, things like that, from this guy's Defenseman of the Month first month. You know, he had a great season, and all of a sudden he gets injured. And is it lucky, this, that, and always in sports. And when there's a media, there's always questions, things like that. So I knew I ended up coming back from that ankle sprain in 3 games left in the regular season. And I the big question was, can this guy carry over into playoffs, or was it just luck? So
this is the media? These are the stories?
Yeah, there's always things like that. And, you know, it's all over social media, things like that.
Do players really get, just as an aside, do players get affected by media?
You know what, I think when I was younger, you kind of it does. And just because, you know, I'm a young kid playing, I'm 16, 17 years old, I'm on my phone. But a big part of why I had such a good year is I wasn't paying attention to all that.
Got you.
My first draft year, I'm looking at the rankings, this, that, this, and I'm letting it affect my confidence.
Right.
The second year, I realized, you know, just focus on winning the hockey game. And you know, you're a competitor. Like, when you're focused on winning a game, you're going to perform your best. You're going to do whatever it takes to win that game. So that's what I did. I put all the rankings, the draft aside, and I was just playing hockey. I was having fun. So that's what I did, and I knew going into the playoffs that it was a big opportunity for my team because we had a great team at the time, and it was a great point to prove that, you know what, this wasn't just a season of luck. I put in the work for this, and I'm gonna show it. So it was. I remember every single game. You'd see tons of scouts in the stands, and you know, you zone that out. I honestly didn't even care at this point. I'm just playing hockey, and I ended up putting, I think we lost in game 7 of the second round on the team who lost 6 games all year. We beat them 3 times in the playoffs, and we lost in game 7 in a 9-7 game. So it was a crazy game 7, and unfortunately not the outcome we wanted. But I finished the postseason with, I think it was 16 points or 17 points in 11 games.
As a defenseman,
It was good. It was really good. It was enough to kind of show people that this was the year. So
right.
Coming out of that, we're going all the way to the 2018 draft. This is upcoming, and the rankings come out, and I'm ranked, I think, 41st in North America. As an older player, second-year eligible player, 41st. It's not likely. I remember the guy who does the NHL Central scouting rankings, he talked to me and he said, we don't really have many redraft eligible players this high. He said, you had a great year. He goes, you earned it. So that was good to hear from him. But like I said, I was kind of went through the year, no expectations, especially from the previous year. And
but there is no plan B.
That's it. So we're playing the game, and you know what? That's it. So 2018 draft comes. I'm ranked, I think, just out of the first round. So we decide to go. My whole family goes to Dallas. I went through the whole draft thing, the combine, which is a great experience in Buffalo, things like that. And then 2018 draft comes. And now to your question, sat through the entire first round, obviously didn't hear my name. And that part of me was getting the flashbacks. Like,
right,
this
right.
is unbelievable. Like, this is this going to happen again?
Like, is your heart racing? Do you feel it?
Yeah. So the first day, it was the first round. I was ranked out of the first round. You never know what's going to happen. So you're on your toes a bit. But I remember it was the second day. I said, you know what? This is the day. I've waited through so many, 8 NHL rounds at this point. This is the day I'm going to get drafted. I wake up that morning. I'm feeling good. And as soon as the first pick gets called in the second round, you know, your heart starts racing again. You're like, what's going to happen? Like, this is unbelievable. And then to get drafted to the Toronto Maple Leafs was a hometown team. To go through the media, things like that, the pitchers, the meeting the coach, the GM, walking down the steps, putting on the jersey for the first time. It was
how was that feeling? So the Leafs call your name. Is it like all the other players? You give a hug, you go up on stage, you get the jersey, the hat. Is it like that?
Yeah. So basically, it's televised on NHL Network the second day. And I remember walking down, all the teams are on the floor, and you're kind of just, you're waiting there in the stands. And my name got called. And like I said, that aspect of proving those people right, I had my family right beside me, which was, you know, unbelievable. Like, to have them there was everything for me. And to stand up, to hug them, and, you know, to have them there, that was like, it was emotional. It was really
right.
emotional.
Right, of course. So,
walk down, and yeah, they got all the teams. They give me the jersey that you put on the hat, and you're shaking everyone's hand. You're saying, you know, that you won't regret this, that. And it was, that was a special day for sure.
So then you go back to Owen Sound, correct?
Yeah.
After the draft. And this is within like a month. You get traded from Owen Sound to Guelph. And then the Leafs trade your rights to the LA Kings.
Yeah.
And this is all within a month.
Yeah. I've gone through a couple injuries, you know, undrafted, 12th round pick, getting cut 3 times from different teams. And then I enter this year. I'm finally on an NHL. I have an NHL team backing me. They own your rights. So my fourth year, I'm feeling good. And I get traded. So in the OHL, basically, there's the contenders and then there's the teams rebuilding. So towards the deadline that year, one of my buddies, Kevin Hancock, who got traded away, I realized that my team was rebuilding. They were selling, basically. So I was ready for a trade in the OHL, which was normal and things like that. And I did get traded to Guelph, which is an older veteran team, a bunch of NHL players, things like that. So I was ready. I was expecting that trade.
Okay.
Month later, not even a month later. Yeah, in the same month, I'm about to hop in the shower. I'm going for dinner with one of the development guys from the Leafs. And I get a call and I look at my phone and it's Kyle Dubas, the general manager for the Leafs. And I'm like, 7 PM I think it was a Tuesday night. It was the middle of the week. And, maybe he's just checking in. I don't know. So I answered the phone and, he politely tells me I've been traded. So I haven't played a game in the NHL yet at this point and I'm getting traded from Toronto to Los Angeles. So he says, the Kings will be in touch and, I wish you the best. He was a first class guy about it. And
you didn't want to question, you didn't want to question anything.
Oh, of course not. I'm a young kid. I just been drafted by the team and, I'm kind of just, I was at a loss of words basically,
Right.
This is way bigger than me at this point. It's the NHL. And so I said, thanks, bye-bye, whatever. And then my phone rings right after. And it's the general manager or the assistant general manager of the LA Kings, Mike Fiuta. I don't think he's with the team anymore, but he calls me and, I pick up the phone and my heart's racing. I'll be honest with you too. It's like, I'm freaking out. Like this is huge. I've just been traded in the NHL. So I answer the phone. I say, hey, how's it going? He goes, this is Mike Fiuta. I'm assistant GM. And he goes, look out your window. I'm like, what? This guy's outside my window right now. I'm in Guelph, middle of a snowstorm. I'm supposed to go out for dinner in 45 minutes. Time's clicking. I'm supposed to meet this guy. And anyways, I pull down the blinds and I look through the window and nobody's there. And I go, excuse me, sir. Like, there's nobody outside. Am I supposed to see something? And he goes, yeah, you see all that snow out there? He goes, welcome to LA. You won't be seeing that much more. And I had a good laugh.
So that must have calmed you down.
Yeah, of course. It was a bit of an icebreaker, which I thought that was really cool of him. I don't know if he's with the team anymore, but I don't think he's with the team anymore. But he was a first class guy. He introduced me to the organization, and he kind of calmed things down for me that night.
What's the toughest part about playing hockey? Is it traveling? Is it staying motivated to play 82 games? Is it the physical toll it takes? Is it being away from family and friends? What's the toughest part?
So for me, it's been different throughout my career. I think, when I was 16, I had to move away from home, my friends, what I'm used to. And that was a big transition for me. And obviously now it's a little bit different. I've moved to LA. I'm living in LA now. And to be on your own and to actually to be a professional at a sport, it takes a lot, and people don't realize it, but every single day you're taking care of your body more than anything, because this is what's going to help you perform. You have to take care of yourself mentally. You have to look after yourself pretty well. And it happens so quick. I went from, playing in the OHL 1 year and, going through so much with so much support to moving across North America into a different time zone and, being on my own. So it's, I think the biggest challenge is trying to be adaptable as fast as you can. And that's something that I think I've gotten better at over the years.
What are some highlights of your career, you're playing hockey up to this point, that you remember?
I think the biggest thing for me that I'm probably going to carry throughout the rest of my career is winning the 2019 OHL championship with the Guelph Storm. And you hear about these championships all the time, but I think to actually go through the playoffs, go through adversity. I think we came back through. We went down 3-0, or we won the first series, we swept, and then we went down 3-0 in the second series, came back and won.
I remember that.
Yeah, unbelievable. And then we went down 3-1 in the conference finals, came back and won. And then we're going into the championship round, and we're playing a team who's gone 12-0 throughout the playoffs. They haven't lost a game throughout the whole playoffs, and we go down 2-0. So they're 14-0, and we're a team that's come back so many times that we find a way to win 4 in a row and win the championship.
Did you guys believe that you would win because of the way that playoff was going?
You know what? I think after we came back from that first 3-0 series, and we came back and won it in 7 games, it was we kind of looked at each other and we said, if we can't do something with this now, you know, we're in trouble. So, but honestly, the winning a championship and the experience that winning gives you is you can't match it anywhere else. It's something that I've learned so many lessons through that I'm going to carry with me forever. And it's something that's helped me with my leadership skills, with everything, honestly, even outside of hockey. You learn so much about yourself and so much about people and your teammates that I think that championship, winning a championship, it was something special for me.
It is time now for us to wind down, and I want to get to my guess what segment. So I'm going to ask you 3 questions, and you do your best to select the right answer.
Okay, let's do it.
Guess
what?
What is the most expensive hockey card on the planet? PSA Gem Mint 10 approved. So PSA is the Professional Sports Authenticator. Is it a 1951 Parkhurst number 66 Gordie Howe rookie card? Is it B, a 1979 OPC Gretzky rookie card? Is it C, a 1951 Parkhurst number 4 Maurice Richard Rocket Richard? Or is it D, a 1966 Topps USA Test number 35 Bobby Orr rookie? So let's go in order. A, Gordie Howe. B, Gretzky. C, the Rocket Richard. D, Bobby Orr.
I'm going to go with, you know, I want to say Gretzky, but I think it's got to be, you said it was his rookie card, Gordie Howe?
Gordie Howe, they're all the rookie cards.
Oh, they're all the rookie cards. Then I'm going to go Gretzky. You got to go with the gray one.
Great answer, and you are correct, sir.
Yeah. Oh,
all right, number 2. What is the market price for that Gretzky card mint condition? Is it A, $205,000? Is it going for B, $18,000, C, $50,000, D, $465,000?
Go again, the first.
So eight. You have A. So what is Gretzky's rookie card in mint condition go
mint,
for?
Mint condition's huge.
Perfect. The PSA Gem 10 is the perfect condition.
Okay.
Is it A, $205,000? Is it B, $18,000, C, $50,000, D, $465,000?
I got, you know what? These are crazy. You know why I need a second.
Because they're crazy numbers, right?
Crazy numbers. I'm gonna go with A though.
That was the. I think that's the Bobby Orr. Gretzky's going for $465,000 in mint. Since you're a defenseman, who is the greatest defenseman in NHL history? And this is a poll on the internet.
Yeah.
Is it A, Ray Bourque? And tell me if you know these, all of them.
I'm going to know all of them. I'm a student of the game.
Perfect. Then I won't have to. All right. Is it A, Ray Bourque? Is it B, Nicholas Lidstrom? Is it C, Larry Robinson? Or is it D, Bobby Orr?
My personal favorite, Nick Lidstrom, but my answer is Bobby Orr.
And you would be correct, sir. And people make a good argument that Nicholas Lidstrom is the best.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
you can't argue with Bobby Orr. You can't.
He's the best.
Yeah. Okay. Last question. True or false? Making it easy for you, buddy. True 50%. Or false? Sean Durzi will be playing in an NHL game come 2021.
You know what? I gotta take the confident answer, and I gotta say true.
I love it. Why? Okay, now the teacher in me says, okay, now why?
Of course, the teacher in you, like, that's just, that's how it is with you.
Because, why do you
like
say
I
true?
Said before, preparation is confidence. In this off season, I mean, I'm taking advantage of the time, and you know, I'm going to try to give myself the best shot I can to play. That's it. That's
so
it.
So, who do you think's winning the cup this year? Who do you have winning the Stanley Cup?
Oh, a couple good teams. I mean, this little qualifier was kind of threw me off a bit. A couple good, couple lower seeds were impressing. But I got a buddy, like I said, the Suzuki guys. He's playing for Montreal right now. He's kind of.
Is he playing? Is he actually playing?
Yeah, yeah. He had a pretty good first round. I think he had two points or something. 2 points, something like that. But
my brother's a Habs fan, so I'm going to talk to him about this.
Yeah, let him know. You'll know him for sure. He had a good round. So I'm going to go with the Habs.
To win the cup?
Yeah, I got to go with my buddy for sure.
Okay, you know that they weren't even supposed to make the playoffs.
Hey, you know what? A little underdog story is not bad sometimes.
You're right. I loved having you, man. You look good. You're mature beyond your years.
No, I mean I'm a fan of your show here. It's a fun listen. It's growing too. I know a lot of people are talking about it, and I'm happy you had me on here too. It's been a good time catching up.
All right, brother.
Okay, right, dude. Thanks. All good right. To talk to you. I'll talk
Peace.
To you soon.
Peace. What a good-hearted young man. I really enjoy sharing these stories. I want to touch on a multitude of topics from a multitude of people so we all can take even just one aspect from someone's story and relate it to our own experience. We should never stop seeking growth, and we should never shy away from struggle. I recall writing this quote on the blackboard of my martial arts class. There is no growth in the comfort zone, and no comfort in the growth zone. Struggle sucks, people. You start to doubt everything, as Dursey stated. But we can all come back from deficits in life. We can all be winners. We just have to put the work in and build that confidence. Speaking of confidence, next week's guest is going to take us on a ride into his world of culinary mastery. He grew up as an overweight kid that was bullied incessantly to becoming a TV sensation on Top Chef Canada. He was a Fridge Wars champion. He is all over the culinary world with his six-pack chef brand. I'm sure it'll be an inspiring listen. So please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Like the podcast, leave a review. That's it for me. Thank you all for the kind words. I'm liking that people are enjoying the content. With that said, until next week, friends. Oh, wait, I forgot. As I sign off, remember to always add, that's right, a little funk to your day.